Hi, my name is Pamela O'Leary. I'm the Talent Acquisition Global Diversity Lead at Ericsson. And Ericsson is really excited to sponsor today's panel on LGBTQ. I love that Madeline Albright basically explained what we do. She was saying how today's society, you can pick up your phone and call anyone anywhere, and that we're really a connected global world. And that's what Ericsson's all about. We create the networked society through our infrastructure, our services, and our software. You are connected to us already. About 40% of the world's mobile traffic comes through our networks. So we are really excited to intentionally sponsor this panel. Diversity is about gender, but it's not just about gender. So we really wanted to make sure that we had this conversation today about how we can create an inclusive workforce, which means including everyone, including the LGBTQ community. So we're very excited. Thank you all for coming today. And I'll turn it over to our moderator, Megan Rose Dickey of TechCrunch.
Cool. Thanks for that. Hey, everyone. I'm Megan Dickey. I'm a reporter at TechCrunch. I cover issues of diversity and inclusion in the tech industry. Before we get started, Dom and Anna, would you like to introduce yourselves briefly? 30 seconds, tops.
We joked about this beforehand. Because of the diversity within the LGBTQ community, I was like, do you want me to say that I'm like a soft butch, masculine presenting, like lesbian, queer, gay? Like, do you want me to use all my words? Like, my biracial, like, my like mixed race. Yeah, I'm all of those things. I use the word spectrum a lot, because we talk about, anyway, I'm on the spectrum in terms of gender and sexual identity.
Cool, and what do you do?
I'm the Vice President of Growth for Lesbians Who Tech. Has anybody heard of Lesbians Who Tech? Yes! Yay. Yes! We are not only lesbians, it's in the name, but we're a community of 20,000 queer women and gender nonconforming people globally. And what Lesbians Who Tech does is we create situations for people to support each other and elevate the visibility and leadership of queer women and gender nonconforming people in tech.
Good job, Dom. So as we joked about, as Dom was mentioning in the chat we had earlier with Megan, so I'm Anna Areola. I guess my hashtags would include clear, soft butch, Latinx. I think that I also see myself as a powerless creative connector amongst the creative industry around the world. I'm a craftswoman, I'm a valley girl from San Fernando Valley, but I find my way here through Kyoto, Tokyo, and now in San Francisco. I'm the Global Vice President of UX and Design of Samsung.
Cool, awesome. Pamela, did you say how you identify?
Thank you for asking. I am an ally, so I identify as straight cisgender woman.
We wanted to trip you up, though. Do you have any more keywords?
White Irish American. but as an ally, that is a strong identity that I hold.
Got it. Cool. Yeah, I'm queer and a lesbian, and pronouns she, her, they, them. I can't really decide. But anyway, so now that that's all out of the way,
and pronouns for everybody. I go with she, her.
As do I.
I go with she, her as well.
Pam, she, her.
She, her.
Okay. Cool. All right, so in the last couple of days, there was kind of a bit of a scare about this anti-LGBT executive order coming down from Trump. But then the following day after that rumor kind of circulated, he came out with an official statement saying that he was going to, keep things as they were, at least at the federal level. So I'm wondering about how, what that would mean, what that could mean for LGBTQ people in the workplace, in the private sector, or what effect that could have.
So for us in our studio, I think that everything's been very pro-community. So no matter where your ethnicity origin may have come from, no matter what diversity or how you consider yourself in terms of the gender spectrum, we're really open and we're very protective and embracing of that community. I think that from an organizational perspective, we really do our best to make sure that those of the community, LGBTQA, like, it's just, it has a sense of home, has a sense of place. And that's something myself, while I've been with the organization, I wanted to make sure that our studio and our teams around the world really felt that safety net. How's it at Ericsson?
I mean, we are a very truly multinational global company. We have over 110,000 employees of 180 nationalities, so we are incredibly diverse, which means that diversity is a challenge because we're operating in countries where there's, you know, varying levels of laws and policies and what you can and cannot do. But it's something that we have across the board, global values that we care about, and LGBTQ in particular is a major focus, especially of, we have a, you know, in the last 3 years, we've really focused on creating a global infrastructure. So D&I Council at the top, D&I is diversity and inclusion, I'll use that a lot, that are picked by the CEO. And then we have regional and local levels as well. And so we've really created this global structure from the CEO to the local level to hold accountability, and we've had senior buy-in. And so now we're really focusing on serving this community. It's definitely a huge priority. Actually, I'm excited to share that this year we're gonna be participating in the HRC Human Rights Campaign Corporate Equality Index, the CEI. We're really excited to do that. Also, we're sponsoring Lesbians Who Tech. So love to you all. We'll be at the conference in a few weeks again together. That's great. And also focusing on building out ERGs, employee resource groups, for the LGBTQ group. We have some that exist in Europe already, but we're really going to be building them out. And we're excited to share that we're launching in Silicon Valley in the upcoming months, our group here. So there's no single way to do it, but we're working on it from many different levels.
Just to put a word in for Ericsson, having been part of Sony Ericsson at one point and having many trips and spent a lot of time in Lund, Sweden, where the epicenter is, if any of you, like, and your partners want to have an amazing experience with a family, making a family, Ericsson in Sweden, and Sweden as a whole, has some of the best rights for the queer community. It's amazing. So I just want to drop that for Ericsson.
Thank you. We tried. Thank you.
Sweden's awesome.
I'd love to get your insight on how you think the private sector and private companies can be sure to support LGBTQ people, even as, like, there's all this uncertainty at the national level.
Yeah. I'm really stoked to be sitting here in between you all, because Lesbians Who Tech is we operate as an LLC. We have a nonprofit arm. Like, we are all of these things that is not a private enterprise in the way that that y'all are. So it is actually my job to create a resource for you all to tap and say, like, okay, I'm throwing the biggest queer technologist party in the nation next month. Do you want to sponsor? Do you want to be here? Will you send your employees? Because this is the place where it's not a little scare for us, and it's not by any means temporary with Pence up on the, you know, on the team. And Lesbians Who Tech tend to be women. There is no part of being a woman that isn't terrified watching the administration try to govern the bodies and the choices and the personal autonomy of women. That's 100% challenging. So it is my job to create a space where I can bring an extremely high number of people in a consolidated time and space in order to blow off steam, connect with each other, console each other, create a space of resistance. We have a whole theme this year at the conference called Technology and the Resistance. It's my job to throw a really good party and to get really good people into the room. It's our job to partner with organizations like you to make sure that your employees can come into this community and feel like they have a place to build power in a really, really kind of radical, in the sense that at the root of our identities, Lesbians Who Tech tend to be intersectional. You're not just a person in tech, you're a woman in tech. You're not just a woman in tech, you might be a woman of color in tech. You might not just be a queer person, you might be a queer person in transition. You might be in transition in citizenship. Like, the tech community, we know, and the queer community, we know. are so diverse. We're multinational, we're multilinguistic. Like, there ain't nobody who is not part of the queer community if you really open your eyes and acknowledge that we are the world. So, what we've done since 2012, since we started, and we did start as 40 lesbians in a room drinking. Like, that's how Lesbian Two Tech started, because actually, you know, how do you actually connect with people to talk nitty gritty, you know, like, oh God, my database is a mess, you should see this script, I'm so embarrassed about, you know, the way that we're running these connections, and like, we had the security issue, and like, could you call your friend? Like, we're a network of professional people who like to talk business. But the culture supporting women in tech and women in tech who are gender nonconforming or non-binary or trans, we are doing everything we can to make sure that the extraordinary intelligence and talent and skill and diversity that we have built into our community doesn't have any reason to defect from our professions. We need to collectively bring to our businesses, and we are activists within our businesses. Everywhere that we work, we have to be the person who says, why is there only one woman on the board? Or like, why are there no women of color in this photo or this panel or this committee? You know, we're often agitators because we have historically been underrepresented and marginalized or made invisible. So as advocates, it is my job to build a space where our people can come together and talk about what is on the line in terms of, do you have secure housing? Like, is it going to become legal for you to lose your housing as a renter because your landlord wants to discriminate you on the basis of your sexual orientation or your gender identity? The fact that you are in a gay marriage or a same-sex marriage, are you going to lose your job because you know, federally you're going to lose protections? All of the non-discrimination stuff, all of the housing, the job, the family, the healthcare, pretty much everything that makes you a high-functioning, kick-ass, awesome person who wants to focus on you, I. Like, I don't want to think about my housing today or my rights to see my children or my ability to maintain my life. Like, all of these social and cultural and legal gains are like, so I can go to work like everybody else and get yelled at by somebody and get into a conflict about the next release and like totally fuck up my backup routine. Like, I want to go to work. That's the party that we throw. Like, we got a lot to do.
Anna, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that get in the way of truly advancing LGBTQ inclusion in the workplace?
Within the workplace, I think that it's, as we look to our industries, and my particular industry is consumer electronics, and I've come out of the space of doing mobile where I was at Apple and at Sony. And I'll touch upon that in a second, what that relates to this, but it's as we go global, we have to think about how do we represent ourselves, how are we true to ourselves in our life as we go visit our external locations. In my case, I have to travel to Suwon, Korea, which is a valley an hour on the outskirts of Seoul. Meanwhile, I'm also going through Busan, or I'm going back through Tokyo, or making a transition through someplace else. And it's pretty interesting to see the reactions when I hand over my U.S. State Department, United States of America passport that says female, and seeing, to a degree, the discrimination, the looks that I get when I'm passing through immigration and customs. I think that we have a job as ourselves of educating every individual, every soul that we touch as we move around the world, and we create not only but with the products that we design and we deliver in hope of delighting our customers around the world, but also through the souls that we touch and the interactions and conversations we make through events like this, or whether it be Lesbians Who Tech, or whether it be a creative conference or SF Design Week, or you know, some design awards gathering. We all have our part to play, whether we're straight, whether we're queer, whether we're cis or we're trans. And I ask that all of you really take a time to reflect on that and have these conversations, these deep dialogues that are outside of a profession, but then also try to bring it back to the profession, how we can better the movement better our professions as we move forward. That's one way that I like to approach this. And it's also, how do I weave the colors of myself into the products that my teams design, that I myself have created, that I want to create going forward in the future? It's no longer, hey, we need to make this product because Super Bowl weekend's going to be coming up and we're going to sell, you know, tens of millions of them or hundreds of millions of them. It's going to be like, what are we going to make that's going to emotionally move someone when they step into the presence of this room that's hanging on the wall or that's on a stand or that's something that is as sensual and as intimate as something you touch, like a mobile device or an IoT object, to a degree, or even a utensil. That an object that we actually put inside of our bodies, our mouths, as we eat. So these are the things I like to question, I like to ask as I sort of go through my own craft and my own discipline in the day-to-day basis, and I lead my team and I push my team towards.
Pamela, you were telling me earlier, because I just didn't know what Ericsson was making these days. I was used to like the feature phones, and you
got me up to speed, and you mentioned that that Ericsson is like working on some like smart TVs. I'm wondering, do you, as someone who's kind of like leading this charge on diversity and inclusion, do you have like any interactions with that team about how they're designing for the world, really, and people of all types? Just to kind of piggyback on what Anna was saying.
You know, I am also not yet officially two months on the job, so I hope to have more of those opportunities. I'm literally very, very new, but my role is global, so it's very exciting. Literally every day I have phone calls with someone in another country, so it's very exciting, and that's a unique. So the way diversity happens at Ericsson is really special. So I imagine that I could be more involved in those kinds of conversations. But we have a global goal that by 2020 we want 30% of our workforce, to the entire workplace, to be women. So we are looking, yes, looking at a lot at the technical roles because we're a highly technical company, but we're looking at, across the board at all the different kinds of opportunities.
Yeah, and I mean, so you mentioned just, you know, your goals for hiring women, and just in terms of diversity reports, like those have been coming out for like the last few years now, but there's not, only maybe like two or three companies have released data on their LGBTQ employee population, and like I've heard different reasons as to why that's happening, or like why it might be problematic, but I'm just wondering, and this is open to all of you, not just you.
What were some of the reasons that you heard why organizations were not able to disclose that type of data? Just out of curiosity, I'll give you an anecdote from my past. But
yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily that they felt like they weren't able to, but they said it was maybe something like legal related, or that in order to get it, it has to be optional. Like they can't force someone to say what their sexuality is, what their gender status is, past like male or female. I'm not totally sure. So I don't know if there's a real concrete legal reason, but I'm just wondering how you all are thinking about this.
From my own experience, knowing that it was an issue, and the organization will remain nameless, this is in the past. And you could read about this on the Techies Project, actually. I sort of disclose a bit more about it up on that article for the New York Times. But I found that people were being forced into the closet because of the overly masculine bro culture that's part of and is indigenous to the electrical, mechanical, and software engineering organizations around the world. And not so much on the marketing side, but deep in heavy engineering, to the point where I would actually go off and seek individuals in these organizations that I, A, knew had amazing talent, and B, I wanted to recruit to my organization abroad. I'd bring them to America to get them out of that environment, because I knew there was no absolute escape for them in the respective countries that they were in. Now those individuals have completely flourished, come out, become who they really were meant to be, and their creative leadership at Google, creative leadership at Apple, and that's been really heartening for me, that I had the opportunity, because of who I was and what my role was in the organization, that I had a budget and I had headcount to relocate these people, and in many cases, got them their green cards too, so they weren't beholden to say they had to do or go back to their mother country or go back to the mothership, but they were given a green card, which to me, I love doing for all of my team members whenever I have the opportunity, because it's liberating. This is your life. This now is your career with this green card. You could do whatever you want with it. You could stay, you could help encourage and empower the organization with, or you could basically flip the table and walk out and go live where and how you want to live. That's why I was asking that question. What type of data is out there? Because I think there should be a lot more data. It should be much more exposed.
And your point about data can be a liability to you, though, to a person who puts that data and then the company has it, and the company is international and it's, you know, all of the United States, and your rights might not be protected. But I also want to cry when you say that. Like, that's like the America that I'm like, oh God, like what's going on? Are you like a queer, amazing butterfly? Like are you somebody who is living in a state of a state repression against your body and against your identity? That like, here is this amazing, unconventional and aesthetic talent and this like visceral thing. Like you're somebody who needs to be released into the freedom of what you can create. Like, and the state is like, no, we have a problem with your masculinity. We have a problem with the way that you're doing your gender. Or like, we don't like what you do with your body.
Yeah.
And you're like, but you do like my phones. And you do like my TV and you like that cord. You like the textile that I pick. Honey, I'm gay. Like, I'm really gay. You like gay products. Like, don't even turn around. Like,
most of the color material and finishing the CMF work in the world is done by us.
right? And so like Lesbians Who Tech as a cultural organization, like it is our imperative that we're like it's not safe for everybody to be out. And people who are out, it's not safe for you to be out about all of the parts of your identity. Like sometimes people are, it's too much. Like, oh yes, I used to be a lesbian, but like now I'm trans. Or like, you know, I used to be, you know, woman and butch identified, and like now I'm really non-binary and I'm sort of like gender superlative. Like sometimes it's too complex, and sometimes it's legally, you are not protected when you have.
But that's the point where you have to have strong leadership. You have to have empowered executives or senior leadership. And to be honest with you, a chip on your shoulder. I mean, I had an attitude of get the F out of my way or fire me to protect my team. And for the most part, that worked. Can't say that it's always successful. But yeah, I mean, you have to be willing to protect your team as if they're your blood, as if they're your family. And I wish that all of you in the room, and I wish that those that will see or hear this conversation later through any medium, that comes across, and I hope there's more of us. I wish I could like splinter my DNA and sort of just send that out there so there'd be a lot more, but
yeah, so
clone.
So I mean, it sounds like that there are risks to being out, of course. And so but
in there are risks to defend too, a lot.
But so in terms of like, in terms of tech companies reporting, like collecting the information about who's an LGBTQ person and then reporting that, do you think it depends on the company or depends on where the company is based? Or
may I jump in?
Yeah,
yeah.
Totally.
So I think exactly what you're saying, above all, the most important thing is protecting people's safety and their right to privacy and their confidentiality. That's above all the most important thing we want to do for our employees. Of course, data is oxygen in tech. We want data, and data can be really helpful to make progress. For us, it's incredibly complicated because, as I said earlier, when you're in so many different countries where it's literally illegal and you can be killed for this, you know, of course we cannot collect data on that there, and we want to be sensitive to that. But we've also, through employee satisfaction surveys, you can include that and engage how inclusive a culture is with that. One thing we're exploring, which you all should check out, is the Culture AMP. Survey. They have a free survey for tech companies to measure diversity, and that's a very comprehensive way to. And so, through these inclusion surveys, there's also ways where you can gather information on this community. But even like, as I, you know, we're excited to be rolling out this new LGBTQ ERG on campus. I have talked to so many of our different employees who are out and willing to confide in me. Some of them have started groups in other countries, and I've literally been talking to them about how do we roll this out in a really protective way when we want it to be a safe space. So that means literally like having an RSVP where they can, and to letting them know this is kept confidential. Having the kickoff meeting after hours, so it's not like, you know, noon, lunchtime, everybody, all the gay people are coming to this room, but also having it in a separate building where people will feel safe, and because like that's incredibly important. We really want to be respectful of that. So it's a complicated issue.
Yeah, and also just something that I've been thinking about, or wondering about more so, is that, so I mean, this is the LGBTQ panel. Do you think, or like, are they all equal, like lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer? Like, are those equal identities within LGBTQ?
That is such a provocative question, don't you think?
I mean, well, it's
Megan,
something that I've really been thinking
about.
I mean,
let's hear your perspective
well,
on
you
this, because I know you have one.
So you're supposed to answer the question.
We're happy to go after you,
yeah,
but I'm
we'll
really
go.
Curious about go. Your perspective.
Well, and you didn't mention
Cam
A,
wants
right?
The ally wants to go.
let me dominate the space. No, but
and
A.
IA. I mean, yeah, so A, it's yeah. Like, yeah. Sometimes things get like things drop off. And I mean, and
ooh, I want to respond to this.
Please do.
Yeah. When you can finish.
It's
this.
You.
Okay.
No, all you.
Damn. I mean, because this is one of the things that I love most. And people like, I don't know, folks who are allies, who are not within the LGBTQ community, and they sort of like are learning or like being exposed or like, I want to be an ally. Like, I just want to be here to support you, but you have too many letters and I don't really understand it. And like, I really definitely know that I can't say certain things.
Just use queer.
Yeah. And so, with lesbians who tech a lot, because we're a multi-generational, multi-coastal, like super geographic, we're in the South, we're everywhere. And the word queer is, it's a solution that works for people on the coasts, and it especially works for young people to just be like, big Q, put everything in it. Like, oh Lord. Because queer can sort of, you know, emergent identities, things that we've never named before, things that we've never heard of before, that the gender flux coming out of, like, we as an organization listen to a lot of, like, you know, millennials and people who are younger than millennials to see what we need to be inclusive about. And then, like, organizations like this sponsor us so that we can tell them, like, what's even on the next frontier of, like, who to include. And so with LGBTQ, of course, like, many people, our surveys, I'll just say anonymously, our data, people check all the boxes. Like, one person is like, oh, I identify as a woman, and I'm gay, and I'm queer, and I'm a lesbian, and I'm sort of transmasculine. And so, like, I'm like, if I'm in the LGBT family, if I'm in the queer family, and I'm looking at this, like, how do I interpret this data? Are you a gay man? No. Maybe? Queer is a word that works for a lot of us, but I love that you asked that question because it illuminates the sort of multifarious like variety in the community.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess I just wonder if
I also heard a little bit like, is there rivalry or is there sort of like,
yeah,
how do we
rivalry
treat ourselves?
Or
I have to say, I mean, like amongst in my career, I've seen gay men versus us, basically. There's been some rivalry there, actually, you know, whether it be like coming at perspectives or they're trying to tell our perspective and we're trying to tell a global perspective,
yeah,
or sort of
between men and women.
Yeah, between men and women.
I mean, like, even in like, I don't know, like I live in San Francisco, like the Castro, like, I'm there. I live like in the neighborhood next door, but like, it's for gay men. Like, it's not,
it is.
People might refer to it as like, oh, that's where like LGBTQ people go. It's
no.
Like,
let's talk about power then.
Yeah, I mean, it's. Yeah, I mean, it's actually always interesting when lesbians who tech, like, storms into town, like, into the Castro with just, like, all these lesbians, like, swarming on the gay men.
And so, to the point of your question, like,
yeah.
Like we work with ERGs, and they're like, yeah, we really want more women, because, like, only guys show up to our stuff, and we're really embarrassed, because you cannot go around saying you're included. It's like lesbians who tech. Like, if only white people show up for our stuff, like, we know we have a problem. We start going around being like, how can you help us? Like, what's
like,
wrong with us?
We're talking
yeah, I mean,
about
Leanne
Fortune 50, Fortune 500 companies here. Now, if you take it also for those of you in the audience that are entrepreneurs, let alone women entrepreneurs, let alone queer women entrepreneurs, it's even more of a miniature microcosm. Like, I was at a venture capital group for LGBTQ in the city, and it was all gay men. And I was one of the panelists, and it was really ridiculous having this conversation because we were talking about, I think the topic was about legal boardship, and also how do you protect yourself against founders that fall out, essentially, that's happened to me in the past. And I wanted to hear other stories of female founders. I wanted to hear other stories of queer female founders. And it wasn't to be found in San Francisco, where you think that would be. I doubt it even exists on Sand Hill Road.
And Lesbians Who Tech we have a very explicit response to this kind of situation, and we call it intentional inclusion. Like the way that we're asking Silicon Valley to set numbers and then achieve goals, mm-hmm. We set numbers and we achieve goals. Like if you don't beforehand think, what are the like 11,000 things that I can do to make sure that not only white gay men show up to my stuff, or that not only white lesbian identified women over 45 show up to my stuff? Like, how do I build an inclusive, diverse, interesting, full, dynamic, and like vibrant community of people? And then you do that intentionally, and you listen to people who criticize you and say, like, this isn't trans inclusive enough, this doesn't acknowledge my non-binary identity, this DJ does not appeal to my musical taste. Like, we listen to the advice because that's our job and that's our community. And that's queer accountability means listening to your young people. And queer accountability means listening to your elders. And queer leadership means standing right between the two and being like, talk, here's a drink. Oh, you're sober? Here's some water. Talk.
Have you tapped into the next generation? So like myself, I'm doing a lot of research on post-millennials. I'm looking mm-hmm. at Generation Alpha. Have you tapped into any of that demographic? Now, granted, they're pretty young, but mm-hmm. still there's some valuable insight. Have you, as an organization, looked into them and sort of gathered what the keywords that they care about or what they're thinking about?
When they come to us, yeah. because we're a professional organization, and our value
at that age group,
offer,
you can't necessarily reach out. But,
right,
yeah.
right. And our offer is to mostly mid-level talent. It's mostly about networking. And as a person, like aside from my professional role, like as yeah. a person, I'm very like hands off. I did not identify as queer in any way.
Yeah.
Lesbian was the first term that was really used with violence towards me, besides bitch, I guess. But like, lesbian was something that was really projected onto me by people who were uncomfortable with my power. I was asexual. I was not interested in people. Mostly I was just a personal elitist. I was just like, I don't know what's going on with y'all. And they were like, you're a lesbian. And I was like, sure, fine, whatever, call me that. So like, when we have this controversy in our intergenerational community about who identifies as a lesbian, like for me, everybody comes with a different story. And for me, lesbian was the first term that people ever really tried to abuse me with. And I was like, oh, yeah, you got a problem with lesbians? I'm gonna go meet a bunch of them. So like, in terms of the youngsters, like we don't actively reach out to them because it's not part of our business or our financial model, but we listen to them because we are a leadership cultural institution. Mm. And when they come to us, they say things like, I need an after party without alcohol. And I'm like, check, green hair, non-binary, no alcohol, next.
It's interesting because, I mean, a total side tangent. Right now, looking at Generation Alpha and the opportunities of the style trends and product trends that are coming out of the research that I'm looking at, it's pretty fascinating, like how diverse they are globally. And I'm looking at trends from Asia, Europe, and North America. But yeah, I'd love to see you guys tap into that. I'd love to be able to talk more about that with you.
Yeah, there's a way in which also queerness is a liberating identity that allows people to step away from their whiteness and their middle classness and their privilege. Like, oh no, like I'm down. Like I'm part of the movement. It's like, okay, yes.
But that's not a good thing though.
No, it's a super like way of stepping away from having accountability around your able-bodied privilege, your class privilege, your language privilege. It's a way of not being an ally in a way. So like I keep a critical lens on radical innovation around like liberated body politics, while also balancing that with a real sense of, hold on, you're an able-bodied, English-speaking, middle-class, college-educated, and like you went to Chinese summer camp, like you're queer, and you have a responsibility to all of these communities to use your queerness as an avenue to have more compassion for and more allyship with people who are marginalized because of being non-normative in whatever way, racially, religiously, nationality. So I keep an eye on it. Yeah.
Are you just like, what is even happening?
No. It's honestly, as an ally, you know, I'm a D&I professional. I have a master's degree in women's studies. I've taken classes on queer theory, but I'm always learning. I'm constantly learning, and
welcome.
I think that's thank you. Yeah, and I think and I appreciate that the audience is here and open and learning, and we're having this discussion because,
totally.
You, as an ally, you have to constantly check your privilege and learn. You know.
Definitely. So in terms of, I mean, we've kind of like gone off in like all these different directions, but like in terms of solutions, like, I mean, Anna and Dom, like Pamela is like 2 months into her role. Like,
what advice do you have for her in terms of being totally inclusive of LGBTQ people and like all the L's, all of the G's? And
you've done the first big step. You've gone out and you've reached out to HRC and you, now you're part of the index. Did you score 100%?
We don't have our score yet. Yeah, but we will
strive for that.
We will, of course,
because
we'll
I've actually
that,
seen
yeah.
a drop. Like when I first joined Apple, they were 100%. But then when they had to teach their management about trans inclusion and trans rights, they dropped and they raised back up again. And so I think it's as new sort of tools come out through them, I think it's helpful for you. But that's a good recruiting tool. When we go out and I do university recruitment mm-hmm. and I'm meeting with the student bodies and the future talent that will manage me at some point, I'd like to be able to have that in my arsenal and have that as a talking to point, regardless if they're part of our community or not. Because for the most part, this younger generation, they're all allies. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great first move. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, it's like trying to find the equivalent of HRC that's global, which doesn't really exist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wish there was.
Yeah, that's the challenge, yeah.
An IEEE standard for queerness. That would be awesome. Actually, I think I'm going to go start that working group.
Do it.
See, I mean, so I look at the HRC index as, like, I think all companies, like, I expect companies to get 100, so then if they don't, then I'm like, okay, like, you really fucking
it's hard. You're harsh. It's hard for a company to maintain. Yeah, because you have to think about it. You have to train people that may have been lifers. And mm-hmm. maybe they don't want to budge with their perspective. And that's hard. But yeah, it's good that you're on top of it, though, like cracking the whip, flogging
like,
these
I don't
companies.
Care about 100%, like, everyone gets that. Everyone should. But I think what I was kind of getting at, maybe just with the whole, like the equality within LGBTQ, I mean, it's just so more getting at like trans rights and healthcare specifically, and making sure that like that's something that tech companies are doing something about, and not just kind of like letting it fall under the wayside because like say like oh but like all of our lesbians and gays love us, so like we're fine. So I guess I'm wondering. Let's see. How can companies be more effective when it comes to trans inclusion?
That's like, I think in terms of Dom and myself speaking for you, that might be out of our roles and responsibilities and job purview mm-hmm. setting what the HR sort of, you know, healthcare policy is. But for the most part, any of us that are looking for employment need to question what is the package of healthcare that you get? And in my case, fortunately, the healthcare is like just amazing right now, especially for the therapies that I need, completely covered. Previous employers have been the same, but there was a point where I was dealing with a really suspect company that gave us out-of-state, living in California, out-of-state healthcare in a very unqueer-friendly environment where none of that was covered. So you really have to dig deep. And I think that, like yourself and Erickson, I hope you're an advocate working with those policy people that set who and what type do you have and what are the options in your HMO and your PPO and, you know, everything else.
And I acknowledge.
Unless you
like,
do set that policy at your organization. I don't know. I assumed, but yeah.
No, I'm like, this gesture is about like the HR thing. Like, yeah. Yes, like I'm not HR professional.
Same here.
Anyway. But I think that healthcare starts to matter when people get into like the mid-level of their career. Like it matters the whole way through, but people don't notice it when they're first starting. They just want a foot in the door. Like for younger folks, it's representation. It's like, do you have out queer leadership? Do you have racially diverse leadership? Are you showing it? Are you comfortable with like mixed race families, that kind of thing? Like, is it pictorial? And then as things get more and more real, healthcare.
Support for non-binary families. Does this particular family, do they have a primary partner and a spouse and children? Are they all covered? That sort of thing.
Yeah. And is the box for male, female, can you write in your own gender too?
Right.
Like that's, like just to be seen at the very beginning. But also I hear from people, like extremely, extremely strong leaders at the senior level, and then also does that trickle down? Like are there, like when you actually talk to people who are working on teams, are they like, yeah, you know, heard that, whatever. Like how do people actually manage people? Because microaggressions or empowerment can happen on this really small level with the manager that you're actually working with. Not the memo you get in your inbox, but the actual people that you work with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of,
so there's like something like knocking.
It's like
my heart.
In terms of, okay, so like we've talked about like the numbers and the diversity stats and whatnot. Something else that has just kind of like come up in this diversity and inclusion conversation. Is talk around like unconscious bias training. I was on a panel like the other last week, and one of the panelists was just like, "That was like the worst thing in the world. I'm done talking about unconscious bias training." But then other people are just like, "No, but like it can be helpful in like these ways, but like it can't just be like a one and done sort of thing." So let's see. I guess I'll start with you, Anna. I'm wondering have you ever been through an unconscious bias training?
So I'm self-teaching myself that now through speaking through friends and reading online source material. You're right. I don't think it could be one of those HR policies going through sexual harassment or ethics policies sponsored by the NYSE where you click through this thing and it's time for 2 hours. No, it has to be deeper than that. I think unconscious bias training and facilitating that ongoing evolutionary sort of learning is more like therapy, I think, for leadership. Mm-hmm. I think we always have to be in check and we always have to be having these conversations. So that's where I am. I'm sort of self-studying it myself and applying it and, you know, a variety of different day-to-day, you know, situations.
Unconscious bias. I was talking to somebody about, like, I was at AppDynamics, actually, and I was saying, like, is it any part of reviewing a job candidate where you look to see if maybe a guy has volunteered for San Francisco Women Against Rape? Like what level do you look at? Do you consider somebody who is intentionally challenging themselves to step out of their dominant way? Like, do you volunteer in communities of color? Do you engage in interfaith activities? Like, to what measure can you actually assess somebody coming in? Like, about the do they engage diverse communities? And internally, that's one of the, I don't know. Like, I think about that a lot, too. Yeah. Is there a way in which you can, like, destigmatize it and, in a way, make it just part of your culture? Because what I think we probably all know is that a healthy culture is just a nonviolent place where people like each other and, like, care about each other and, like, take the time to understand. And a safe, healthy culture is a place where you can kind of mess up and be like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Like, I always forget that you're Latino. I'm so sorry. Like, I know that's a thing for you, that you have to come out because, like, of your complexion. And, like, I apologize.
Thank you for bringing
Latinx.
That up. That's really important. Chemistry and cultural fit. Chemistry is probably more important than cultural fit because if you don't have the right chemistry, there's no way they're going to be a cultural fit. And when I hire, I look to that because without that, if that chemistry fit is not right, there is a high possibility that that individual will cause essentially a hostile environment. And we need to make sure that that chemistry and culture is the right fit. And it's okay. Sometimes you need to basically be in the mix and sort of be there for a few minutes to see if that's right. And then we have to realize, not the right fit. Let's recuse ourselves from the situation and move on and leave with your head high.
And I appreciate that addition because, like, I was looking at your credentials. Like, you have a lot of nonprofit experience in your background, right? And I think about, like, the way a company chooses a head for D&I actually says a lot about the way that they approach the issue. Like to be a cultural leader, you actually have to have a really high cultural quotient. You have to understand how people work in groups. And to your question about unconscious bias specifically, like I think that both are important. The explicit training, the explicit charge to be self-aware and to start investigating, like, oh my God, how does whiteness shape the way that I experience the world? Or like, I have like just good looking privilege. Like I just have great hair and like that makes life really easy for me. Fucking true. It is so true. And that's the difference between, you know, like it opens the door to so many different opportunities for you if you have great hair. Which is super annoying, but like that's the way actually, like if you start to become self-aware and self-investigating, you're like, oh my God, I never think about, did I, like I talked to a brilliant dude who was like, I couldn't even go to this job interview because I got there in the tiny little startup, which was so super hip, didn't even have a wheelchair lift, didn't even have an elevator. He was like, they were in a warehouse on the edge of town and like they were cool as hell and I couldn't actually even get in the building and I didn't think to ask. God. Is it wheelchair accessible?
That ADA responsibility is part of the leadership too. If they're in right. this cool, like hipster startup area, they have to be advocates to the landlord to get the ADA changes so, done to the facility.
So you need to have explicit training around what is unconscious bias and give people an education so that they can like raise their quotient. And then you also, I think, bring in cultural leaders who just know how to throw cool parties or like know how to throw like cool events where like men can talk about their experience working at SF Women Against Rape and women can talk about working with, you know, Afghan refugees, like whatever it is where you could bring people together and sort of de-escalate the context and not be like, this is the meeting where we treat you all to be friends. It's like, oh God, that's awkward. Throw the meeting or the event where you treat each other like people, and that builds like a healthy ecology for people to make mistakes. And I think that that's really important because mistakes will be made. It's just part of being in diversity.
May I add a point?
Yeah, but one thing. If sure, you want to line up for questions, mm-hmm. you can start doing that.
So I totally agree with what was said. Just you have to have an unconscious bias training. If your organization does not, I think that's a huge problem. Mm-hmm. But it's integrating called constant education and awareness. So yes, we have a LGB toolkit and we have a T toolkit to like particularly train managers. We're doing diversity trainings for hiring managers and for recruiters to, mm-hmm. to really focus on the bias coming in.
An LGB toolkit.
And a T toolkit, yes.
Why is the T separate?
the T is separate, but we wanted because we're working in countries where people have no baseline knowledge of what transition means, any of that.
Not
and
a good excuse, but.
Well, we're trying to build up that basic. I mean, we're working in complicated situations and cultures all around the world, and so, but we've integrated LGBTQ into all of these constant trainings, but it's also, you know, doing subtle things in your regular newsletter, having celebrating. History and we've had webinars with speakers who are from that community, film screenings. It's a whole constant culture, education awareness culture.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Tracy. I'm an ally. I'm the mother of a beautiful 18-year-old daughter who is a lesbian, and I'm very proud of her. And I'm here today actually on her behalf, and she wanted me to ask you all, because she is in school and she plays a sport in college, so she could get out of that to come today. She wanted me to ask you all if you have any advice for young women who are entering the workforce who, you know, are in the queer community.
So I have three children as well, two daughters and a son, and they were supposed to be here, but they were also not allowed to be here because of all the homework and stuff that was going on. So being a mom is hard, I totally understand. What does she know what discipline, what field she wants to go into? Is she going in undeclared, like basically exiting?
Right now she's a liberal arts major, but honestly.
Arts, don't worry about it, just be yourself.
She wants to do. I think that's okay.
My experience is in this day and age, you just have to be authentic. Make sure that you yourself are vulnerable and you're authentic and you'll just be accepted. That's probably one of the best chemistry and sort of cultural fit things that I would look for.
I thought it was interesting what you were saying earlier. I'm sorry if I'm taking your time. That about how the younger generation is very accepting, and that's been her experience. And I was not sure if that's because you know, she grew up in Sunnyvale mm-hmm. and goes to, you know, we kind of live in a bubble here where people are, and at her school they're very accepting of the
LGBT. It's nice that you say Sunnyvale is a bubble because I would not have thought that, but that's awesome. Yeah.
Well, the Bay Area Valley is much more.
It's a microcosm for sure.
Yeah,
I think
much more accepting.
Yeah.
So I wonder, as a parent, is this a realistic expectation that she'll be treated like this?
She will, especially. Yeah, she's part of a generation that sky's the limit. It's totally different than when we were younger.
Great.
Especially when I was younger. So.
Thank you.
I also want to throw into that, like, as a queer person, she is also still a woman. And that is not the easiest thing to navigate. You know?
True.
You got to get eye contact. Like, hey, I'm right here. Can I get eye contact? Like, I just said something important. Can I get somebody to hear it? You got your work cut out for you. We all do.
Hi, my name is Brittany, and I have two questions, actually. One, I guess, could be shorter and could be talked one off. So a question that I have is, I'm a part of a group starting a Pride organization or a Pride group at my company. And so we just had our meeting last month. It was really great. And we broke off into some subcommittees. And so as one of the people spearheading this, what advice would you give to someone starting a group like this at a company where the only diversity that they have is like gender at the company, but they're not talking about race, they're not talking about able-bodiedness, they're not talking about any immigration, any of those things that are super important, right? So this is like the next step. So then what do we do to make this a really great experience and then taking those next steps to then include other groups? And the other part of that is, Dom, do you come and do any consulting at companies to help with this process?
Yep.
You do. Okay. So we should talk after.
Yeah, let's do it.
And then first part.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. On the first part, my first piece of advice is to invite allies. Like, not everybody is comfortable coming, like, and like identifying. Like, there's a safe space, like, in some point of the construction of the group. I would always recommend, because Lesbians Who Tech does this a lot, we're like, we want allies. Like, we're honestly not trying to turn people into lesbians. We just want people to come to our parties because, like, we want people to, like, you know, understand us and, like, you know, understand what our issues are and hear with their heart. And so we include people. And so, like, there's a space for separatism, and there's definitely a role for allies to play. And the more outspoken you can be about that, like, we want allies. Like, you just want to come learn about us? Like, come do this with us. Are you curious? Are you here? Just come.
From a legal perspective, be sure that as you start this group, make sure that HR is aware of it. Invite HR to come. Mm-hmm. And then once you get them in the room and they seem, like, on board with you, which I believe, hopefully they are, ask for budget.
No, they're totally, everyone is on board with the group. We had a meeting, HR was there,
awesome.
Legal was there, healthcare
was budget.
There.
So you can do
we
a
have
really
a budget,
cool events, yeah.
Everyone's there, awesome. There's tons of queer people, myself included.
Fantastic.
Like, and we have a lot of the things that you spoke about, like healthcare for trans people, healthcare for their families and things like that. So it's just, how do we then, like, mobilize and just turn our ideas into actionable things?
May I? So I think also, and I'm happy to share resources because we're going through that same process as well, tie it to the business case. I think that's mm-hmm. what's really going to get solid recognition and support and to help this grow. So, like, that could even mean, like, hopefully if you have resources.
Setting KPIs for this group that align with the overall organization.
I missed the first part, I'm sorry.
Setting the KPIs, mm-hmm. so the key performance indicators, or the OKs. Associated with the overall overarching corporate strategy. And then you might even be able to break that down even to a lower level subcontext where you're like, okay, what business units are you from? Maybe you're from all of them, maybe you're a couple. How you align your activities, help enhance or better educate or deliver innovative ideas or disruption for those particular business units themselves.
And I mean, it could be even as easy as starting, like, if you're going to march in Pride, see if you can invite your customers and connect with, if they have an LGBTQ ERG.
Awesome,
I mean, that's
t-shirts.
A nice way, like, to build a connection between the business. But good luck. That's amazing. That's exciting.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Hi, my name's Helen. This is maybe more of a comment than a question, but I've been in the tech industry for almost 40 years, so I've seen a lot of changes. But I think it's true that most of the tech gatherings, tech queer gatherings, are dominated by men. But then I feel like my entire working life is dominated by men. Most of the time, I'm the only woman in whatever it is I'm doing. In fact, when there is another woman, it's like, oh, hi, this is great. So let alone, you know, another queer person. So it's not surprising to me, in a way, that that this happens. And I think that the genius and wonderfulness of Lesbians Who Tech, which I discovered like less than a year and a half ago, is that it changes that entire dynamic. And it, you know, there are these gatherings that do bring all of us women who are dispersed across all these companies. And some companies, I think, there are certainly companies that are doing much better than the companies that I've worked for in terms of having more women and having more lesbians, queer women, whatever. But you know, it's just amazing. So if there's people here who haven't experienced, I'm doing an ad for you. who haven't experienced Lesbians Who Tech yet, I highly recommend it. There's like some local groups that have gatherings sometimes. There's the summit in San Francisco. There's one in New York. They show up at things like Grace Hopper Celebration. So check it out. And in my entire life until I met Lesbians Who Tech, I never imagined that it was possible, in spite of Anna's stories, which I think are very interesting, but also very much like an individual, I never imagined it was possible to actually recruit people based on the fact that they were gay or lesbian. And Lesbians Who Tech actually has addressed that as well with the career fairs that they do that are very, not only attract lesbians, but also gay men and lots of people of color. So it's a, Leanne Pitsford, who conceived this originally, has done an amazing job of changing a lot of dynamics. And I hope that in another, well, hopefully less than 40 years, things are really different in terms of the number of women and the number of out queer folks at least in the tech industry where I work.
Thank you. I want to see this outside of the tech industry. I talked about this with you and Megan earlier, and like, okay, great. We've got Lesbians Who Tech, but like, I'm involved with so many other industries. Like, I'm now one of the chairs at SF Design Week, which is one of the biggest design festivals in the world, next to Milan and New York and Tokyo. I want to see activities around that. I'm also on the jury for Industrial Design Society of America. I want to see IDSA, which operates out of the Ford Family Foundation in Detroit, Michigan, which is hella scary. If you're trans, going to the bathroom there. I want to see that change. We have to think outside of this microcosm that's the Silicon Valley. We have to think outside of software, because like right now when we say tech, a lot of everyone thinks it's software. What about the women? What about the queer community that's part of the IEEE, the electrical engineers, the mechanical engineers? These are the underrepresented, you know, amazing individuals that need to be celebrated that are just unrecognized. So I hope that we elevate that more than just sort of iApps and Android apps. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Real shit that gets us to the moon, basically.
Right, yeah. Lesbians Who Tech, we do focus, like we did space and hardware last year. It was one of our foci, but we do focus on software. And I hear you, like folks in electrical. But Helen, I want to thank you for that. And for anybody who is not aware of the event, it's next month in San Francisco.
This month, it's February.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's February. Oh, God. Yeah, it's the 23rd through the 26th. And if you just Google Lesbians Who Tech, you'll find it. 23rd through the 26th in the Castro in San Francisco. You should come as an ally or as a queer person.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. We are out.
Yes, rock on.
Yay.